Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does Dallas want to be, and do we have the power to make it so? The evolution of any city is in part an organic process, unpredictable and imperfect, affected by the daily decisions of the individuals who live and work there. But planning, design, and vision play a role as well as we consider the kinds of spaces we want to gather at, travel through, and live in. Joining us to talk about how we all share in the character of our cities, we have two guests. Urban designer and landscape architect Ignacio Bunster-Osa is principal of Wallace, Roberts & Todd and author of Reconsidering Ian McCarg, The Future of Urban Ecology. Gail Thomas is CEO of Trinity Trust. Both will be participating in the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's What Makes a City Conference tomorrow at the Latino Cultural Center. Welcome both of you to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
Good afternoon.
When I hear a question like, what does Dallas want to be, or what does Fort Worth want to be, or Denton or Arlington for that matter, it takes me first to questions about character and justice and access to democracy and education. How do aspects like design and urban planning play into those things?
Well, it's interesting in the case of Dallas because there's been a number of, I think, far-reaching plans that have been done in the city going back to the 1920s, and you know, with George Kessler, and then followed with Harlan Bartholomew later on. And if you look at those plans, they were really far-reaching. In the case of Kessler, of course, that was a plan that determined that something had to be done with the 1908 flood, and so levees were built to contain those floods, which changed, I think, dramatically what the center of town was from an environmental point of view. But I think people may not remember that Kessler did plan a park in the center of the floodway that has yet to come. So I think it's good to sort of think of the value of planning as putting forth visions. Sometimes they take a while to get done, but that's important. In the case of Bartholomew, somebody may remember that he wanted to have sort of a Turtle Creek-like parkway where today is Central Expressway.
It's hard to imagine. It's lovely to imagine, but it's hard to imagine.
Right. But then again, vision sometimes, you know, change a little bit, but it's good to have them. Otherwise, how can you figure out what you want to be?
And my sense, Chris, is that every city is very unique, just like every individual is unique. And I think we each as individuals have a character and a calling. It's like a seed corn for an oak tree grows an acorn grows into an oak tree. What is it about Dallas that has created this remarkable city we see today? It's an interesting question, and it's one that we want to discuss tomorrow at this conference.
Is there a broad consensus about what kind of Dallas residents want, or should there be, or is it okay for there to continue to be sort of some healthy debate about the ways that the city takes shape?
Well, my sense is that it really cannot be otherwise. Dallas is a gathering place of many cultures and many peoples. And this is very interesting because geologically, this is our foundation and our ground. We have many different fault lines coming together under our city. And my way of imagining Dallas is that it creates a constant, I love the word turmoiling, but almost a vortex. And we're always just coming together in a combustible way, and we're arguing and we're discussing. And yet out of that comes this kind of fiery spirit that forces us to do things, and we do them.
Ignacio, how has interest grown, and why has interest grown in so many parts of the country in pulling people back into urban cores that maybe, after the Second World War, many people decided they really didn't want to spend time in? They certainly didn't want to live there.
Well, it's a number of factors. I think that finally we may be reaching the outer limits, if you will, of what suburban expansion is or has been since the Second World War. People today live in places that require such long commutes, and when you begin to calculate the social benefits and environmental benefits of that kind of lifestyle, a lot of people are finding, well, I need to spend more time with family, spend less in transportation, fueling the car or repairing the car and so forth, or having a car. And so they're looking for alternative ways to live. And I think many young people particularly thrive in this internet economy, in the social places that create contact so that exchange of ideas can be more immediate and personal than simply being in an office somewhere, far away from home. And so they are seeking for that combination in ways that I think are quite extraordinary that no one perhaps predicted, 20 years or so ago.
And amazingly, the statistics show that our young people, 25 or 28 years old and younger, are not applying for their driver's license the way they were when, you know, for example, when I was a young girl. It's gone down steadily every year. So fewer and fewer young people want to drive. They don't want those commutes into the suburbs.
Will these more densely populated urban areas continue to work for those marvelous young people when they start to have families?
I think we have to make certain that they work for their young people. We have to have schools in our inner cities that are excellent schools. I think it's our biggest challenge, the biggest challenge we have right now in Dallas, Texas, and in the state of Texas. We have to do something about that big time.
But I think also younger families are seeking environments where they can go play, mm-hmm. where kids can ride their bikes without necessarily thinking, oh, are they going to get hit by a car or a bus along the way? And so the green systems of a city that support that kind of life that is outdoor-oriented for exercise and health are becoming more and more valuable. And so to the degree that any city can provide that in a location that's convenient to all the other amenities that density provides, cultural and so forth, then there are real advantages that people go to those places.
I happen to know that Ignacio rides his bicycle to his work every day in Philadelphia.
And are there dedicated traffic lanes, or how do you manage traffic?
Well, I'm a bit of a road warrior, so I'm probably not a good example. But there's infrastructure that has to be looked at. And I know in cases, some cases where vehicular driving lanes have been taken up by bikeways with buffered shoulders and things of that sort. And they have huge impacts because it's more convenient and safe. And so people flock to them. So it can be done.
Does it require a kind of rethinking of what people imagine to be the American dream, which is like single family home and a little plot of grass that is just your own, that you're responsible for, but that nobody else goes on to? That really has to be set aside if we're going to share large spaces rather than necessarily ensuring that everybody has their own little plot of land. And I wonder how open, Gail, you think Dallas is, North Texas is, to these ideas.
Well, we're definitely changing. We see that. We see that with the popularity of Uptown, with Bishop Arts, with all of our areas where our young people are gathering, the Design District, Deep Ellum. Our young people have shown us that they like to live close to each other, and they like a communal way of life, gathering places, coffee places, and so on. Everyone is not going to be living that way, of course. We're going to, as I said earlier, we are many, many people. We have many different lifestyles. But we certainly need to be accommodating our young people and the way of life they're choosing. And I think many of the empty nesters, like my husband and I are now, will be considering very carefully the opportunity to move back downtown, to move downtown. Now, back downtown in Dallas doesn't work because
very few people can say that.
Very few people, and we never did live downtown, but I don't think we've had a downtown inhabitation since, the 1920s, mm-hmm. probably. That's a long time.
Yeah.
This idea of freedom related to the American dream is a very interesting subject. I always like to think that when you're on a bicycle, you're as free as it gets. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wait for the bus. You're not subject to congestion or the vehicles next or in front of you. And so you decide when and how and where you go without much encumbrance. And also cities, and when they provide some degree of density, you get businesses that give you more choice in terms of where to go, where to eat, where to shop. And that, to me, is quintessential, you know, part of the American dream. Have those choices that allow you to be free. And I think cities can do that.
We're speaking this hour to Ignacio Bunster Osa, urban designer and landscape architect and a principal of Wallace Roberts and Todd, and Gail Thomas, who is CEO of Trinity Trust. Both will be participating in the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's What Makes a City Conference tomorrow at the Latino Cultural Center. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, either ask a question or maybe talk about what you want your city to be, we would love to hear from you. The telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. You can email think at kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education with courses in art, culture, history, communication, photography, and film studies. Registration online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. The Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture holds its What Makes a City Conference tomorrow at the Latino Cultural Center in Dallas. We're speaking this hour with two of the participants to be. We have Gail Thomas, CEO of Trinity Trust, and Ignacio Bunster Osa, urban designer and landscape architect and author of the new book Reconsidering Ian McHarg, The Future of Urban Ecology. If you'd like to tell us what you think makes a city, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think at kera.org or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think. What is the right balance of development between destinations where people may sort of leave their home neighborhood to spend time with people from all parts of the city and upkeep and maintenance and development of smaller sort of neighborhood assets, smaller parks and that sort of thing? And how do we make decisions about that?
Decisions are made generally with community, a lot of community input in those cases. And I think, frankly, both systems need to overlap and be self-reinforcing. I mean, most people live their daily lives, everyday lives, you know, within a mile or so of home, if you account for schooling and shopping and so forth. And it's great to be able to get away from that little bubble and go to the great park or do the great things that draw you outside. But what is that environment within that mile that should give you joy to be in? So there have to be attention to the way that sidewalks, streets, little pocket parks, wherever you can find some amenity close to home, to make the most of it. And I think that's where you have to work with residents, communities, and let them feel that you can listen to their needs and work with them hand in hand. I mean, I think that's one of the great things of urban design is to be able to get to know where people come from, what are they doing, where are they going, and what do they care about, and then help them do that in that very close circle. It's actually sometimes easier to do the big parks in terms of design, not necessarily implementation, than working with the community process. But I think both are very, very essential to the idea of how cities might work and where they're going.
You know, it's interesting, your question, Chris, because I was thinking that's one thing that's made it very difficult for Dallas in our urban planning, because Dallas we've had people working in a downtown office park for the most part, or they're going to one of the three other centers. We've had three downtowns, you know, in the last 20 years. And people drive from their bedroom community to an office park and go to work and drive back home. And that's what we're seeing and wanting to happen in Dallas. We were talking about it earlier in the earlier part of the hour. And yet this is very difficult for a city to make this move. It's hard for people to imagine a different lifestyle from the one they've grown up in. So it's a difficult question. And now, how does Philadelphia answer this question?
Well, Philadelphia is an older community, so I guess the neighborhoods grew up in a more organic way to define themselves today. And it's a very walkable city, very bikeable city, very transit-oriented city. I think it ranks in the top 10 cities where you don't have to have a car to move around. So In places like Dallas, where the culture, where the city basically grew along with the automobile, in many ways, hand in hand. So the infrastructure for car movement is far greater here than, say, in Philadelphia or older northeastern cities. So I agree with Gail. I mean, the challenge to reverse that culture is great, but I think, frankly, the only way to do it is to put better value at the other end. What is it that people would gain by changing lifestyles? I mean, most people respond to that when there's a better value at the end of the proposal. And that value in cities today have to do with the idea of health, personal and community, what makes your life better from a physical point of view, mental point of view, and social point of view, and economic. If you can save money and be able to afford a better home because you don't have a car, well, people are responding to that, to those kinds of opportunities. And I think many developers in the marketplace are beginning to recognize that portion of the demand and supplying that. And those that are doing it better are setting an example for others to say, well, people are buying that, so maybe I should try that. And so it's a slow process, but I think it's a very interesting process, I think, what is happening today on that score of changing, seeing a better value somewhere else than the way you did it before or your family did it before.
And a good example, of course, is the people moving back downtown because of the amenities. Right. Just within the last few years, Clyde Warren Park, wonderful museums, the Arts District, and, of course, the whole Trinity area now, the Design District, Trinity Groves, after we opened the magnificent Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge. And people are going to eat and going to the restaurants across the river in West Dallas. I've heard many young people say they're looking for houses, you know, in that area in West Dallas along Canada Drive. That's going to be shifting and moving. And we don't want to see gentrification there. However, we do want to see young people moving in and starting families all over the city. And I think we'll see it along the banks of the Trinity River.
Is it possible that people will be more drawn to shared spaces once they don't have cars? In other words, we sort of think that if we can just get them out of their cars, they'll want to come to these places. And yet, there's something about car culture that is isolating, right? You're in this little metal and steel and glass bubble that keeps you from often making direct eye contact with people around you. It almost seems as if we could get people... I mean, which comes first, getting people out of their cars or creating spaces that they want to go to? Because maybe people are just not convinced yet.
Definitely creating spaces people want to go to. We've seen that. We've seen it simply in the creation of Continental Bridge. And by the way, I want to say we opened Continental Bridge in June of just this year. And the designer of Continental Bridge is sitting right next to me, Ignacio Bunstraosa and WRT. And that Continental Bridge, I've said this all over town recently, is the best example of building community in our city, offering a place for people to come together, for families to come together, play together, and meet people from a different walk of life or different cultures, enjoy different foods. All the different food trucks are there. It's a remarkable place to gather and very successful.
I like to use the example of, this might seem strange, Starbucks. Starbucks, as a coffee establishment, came up with the idea of putting sofas in their stores. That was kind of a novelty thing. I mean, we always went to a coffee shop and sat on our own table, and that was it, kind of very isolated in a way. But a sofa and a coffee table environment in Starbucks, I think, changes the way we perceive space as something that's shared. Even though you're sitting on a sofa, you expose your knees, your legs, your shoes to somebody else, and it's a different kind of way of having contact with your neighbor. And I think that if more places in the city were a bit like your living room outside, so take the Starbucks model and put it at a street corner, put it in a sidewalk, put it in a little pocket park or a parklet, that begins to change the way that people understand public space. in ways that also can be fun. And I think in that regard, public art plays a huge role because it's a way of creating interest, mystery, the kinds of perceptions and sensibilities that make us interesting as a culture in cities. And I think if you can integrate that with this mentality of a shared space that affords a way to get together, people respond to that. I think it's a real interesting thing to do.
What about programming of these shared spaces? Where's the balance between creating events and opportunities for people to engage in really distinct ways and leaving things sort of open-ended so that you can show up somewhere and maybe you're just there to read a paper or maybe you're there to read your tablet. Maybe you are there to play Frisbee. Maybe you're there to people watch.
Well, don't you think we have to have both? But usually it starts with programming because we have to be invited to come, mm-hmm. and we don't know that we can do other things. But if there's a program we're invited to, we might bring our family and come down and enjoy playing chess or croquet or badminton. But then when we're there in the park or in the space, we realize we could just come and watch or just come and bring our own supper or lunch and enjoy watching the sunset. And then we start creating our own life activities that involve ourselves and other people and neighbors. And that's when real magic starts happening in a city.
I read soon after the Continental Bridge opened, it took a gathering of something like 500 or 600 local guitarists showed up to strum and play. I don't know who organized that, but I can tell you that we never once imagined something like that taking place there. And I think it's wonderful. So in that case, so much of that bridge is fairly open and unencumbered by programming that is set to do X, Y, and Z. And so the degree to which you can create a bit of space that's wonderful to be in terms of the qualities of the views, the air, then people will respond and they will invent things to do. And I think it behaves in a way that the old cities used to, where the street became everything.
The city has done a good job, the city of Dallas, in programming Continental Bridge. They have yoga in the morning and they have dancing at night and Zumba and, of course, chess and, and bocce ball. And right. What else, Ignacio?
Well, there's the, you know, play equipments and people can jog around and just take in the sights. So it's an interesting
place. But it's a big, long bridge, so.
Yes. There's not that many 2,000-foot long bridges that are 50 feet wide that are public spaces. I think it breaks a record that way.
But people are starting to have little birthday parties out on the Continental Bridge. We're having one there this evening, actually, a little party. So it's fun.
We're speaking this hour of two of the participants in the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's What Makes a City Conference that takes place tomorrow at the Latino Cultural Center. Gail Thomas is CEO of Trinity Trust. Ignacio Bunster-Osa is principal of Wallace, Roberts & Todd and author of the new book, Reconsidering Ian McHarg, The Future of Urban Ecology. If you want to join the conversation, call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education with courses in art, culture, history, communication, photography, and film studies. Registration online at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with two participants in the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's What Makes a City Conference that happens tomorrow at the Latino Cultural Center. Gail Thomas is CEO of Trinity Trust. Ignacio Bunster-Osa is urban designer and landscape architect and author of the new book, Reconsidering Ian McHarg, The Future of Urban Ecology. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. We hear now from Connie via email who says, I come from an area that had sidewalks. It always made me sad that there are very few, if any, in the greater North Texas area. I believe sidewalks promote community. Thoughts on that?
Well, I think they definitely can, but we also need things like front porches. Mm-hmm. Sidewalks seem to go with front porches in my imagination. And I grew up in McKinney, and we had sidewalks, but we all had front porches, and we would sit out on our front porch and wave to each other. And when we were teenagers, we'd wait for the boys to drive by. And we don't have that now. We have garages on our front and gated communities in many cases and no sidewalks. And that's not conducive to community. And I think we all really long for places where we live that are communal.
And maybe some of those changes started to happen when we all became really afraid of crime. And I don't want to minimize the fact that crime still happens, but the crime rates have fallen significantly in this part of the country and many others. And it's almost like we haven't adjusted our expectations yet, and we're still worried about things that aren't happening as often in most parts of this area. And I want to, you know, be careful about the language I use there.
I think the perception of crime is perhaps more significant than the actual statistic. And perception, you can change perception, I think, in very important ways. I'll give the example of my own neighborhood in Philadelphia that was beset by crime in the 1990s. And it was very close to the University of Pennsylvania. And the university simply was suffering because the perception of crime was deterring important scientists and researchers and some students to go there, which is, of course, not a good thing for any university. So they took an active role in changing that perception. They improved lighting in certain streets. They created more of a district of self-policing by having ambassadors on the streets. They were not policemen, but all it takes is you see the ambassador on a bicycle with their walkie-talkie, and you feel safe. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, of course, obviously, they respond to situations and support the local police. So there are ways in which perceptions can change. And there are all kinds of standards about designing public spaces and sidewalks and streets, of course, to provide a sense of safety in ways that perhaps were not there when sidewalks were first invented. And so all these things can really help in that regard.
My mentor, one of my first mentors was Holly White, and of course with Jane Jacobs. And Holly White said, what we need is just people. We need people. And a good example of that, I walk in my neighborhood. We have no sidewalks, but there are so many people walking early in the morning. We even walk early at 6 when it's still dark. And a lot of times the street lights are out. But we feel safe. You know, we know the silhouettes of other people coming because they're there every morning too. So we all need to be out participating in our city wherever we live. And if we did that, we'd feel safe.
We have an email here from Christine who says, in class last night, we watched a documentary by William White that William White created regarding the social life of small urban spaces. The Belo Park was discussed, and our class was wondering what went wrong. The park is not as functional as the plan must have originally called for. Any suggestions on designing urban pocket parks?
Surround them with retail and Starbucks.
That's right. And I'll say, in the case of Belo Park, I wish we had those underground walkways up on the streets.
Yes.
You know, we did that 30 years ago and thought that was the right thing to do. But Minneapolis and St. Paul had built their skywalks, and we were copying them. But they have, you know, 0-degree weather all winter for many months. And I think most people in Dallas now would agree, everyone except my husband. He loves the underground, but we get in lots of arguments about that. We need to bring the people up from underground, put them on the street, right. And as Ignacio says, put our retail up there, flower shops, coffee shops, and so on.
And in some cases, I know of situations where cities are putting small little coffee shops, cafes, sometimes food trucks, in parks that are fairly inactive, beautiful as they may be, and that brings activity. And in fact, the food truck phenomena that's sweeping the country is really interesting because you're getting all kinds of diverse gourmet-type situations, and they can park in places that there isn't a storefront next to you, and that draws people. And so if you put two or three food trucks in below,
well,
and
Clyde
put
Warren
some tables,
Park is the perfect example.
Right, there you have it. Mm-hmm.
You
right.
know, we had, I mean, we all love the restaurants that's there, and it's a superb restaurant. But
right.
the food trucks at Clyde Warren Park give you a great variety of food
yeah.
and attract so many different kinds of people.
And I guess food trucks are low commitment, right? Because if something's not working out or if people aren't buying, then the next one is ready to sort of pull into that space.
If you haven't seen the movie Chef, that'll tell you everything about food trucks. It's wonderful.
It's one of the things that marks Dallas is our love of food and the really good food we have in our city and the fine restaurants and the variety of restaurants and all the different cultures from all over the world represented in Dallas by our food. It gives us really... I think we stand out in a city for that one reason.
Let me ask you what might sound, Gail, like a silly question, but it's not. Ladies in Dallas love their shoes. And occasionally you'll see someone trying to enjoy a park in you know, $600 pumps that aren't conducive. Do we need to maybe think differently about how we look in public and hang out in public? Is that something that will change about the city? Or is this just a negligible concern?
Well, you use the phrase hang out. I mean, if we're going to hang out, we need to have on flats, you know, or some kind of sandal or something we can hang out in. And if you want to go to an elegant party, put on your great, you know, high heel shoes and feel wonderful in them. And I think we'll just always have to have both, a variety. But you're right, Dallas women who have loved dressing and high fashion need to think about going to the park. I know when we build our park down in the Trinity River, I would say don't wear your high heels. Put on your flats. Yeah.
What I mean, how much of the spirit of a city, the character of a city, the change that comes to a city relies on people at the grassroots level?
I think it matters enormously. We did a conference, a What Makes a City conference in 1985 called Growth and Undergrowth. And we said most of the publicity is about growth in Dallas, and it was at that time. I know one of the banks said, "We know no limits." That was their big billboard. We know no limits. And yet, we were pointing out that it is the undergrowth in our city that gives it its real culture and an impetus to think differently, be different, have different music, different foods. We mentioned that earlier. And write poetry and have poetry slams on the streets. And this was when Deep Ellum was really hopping, you know. Mm-hmm. Now we have Bishop Arts. It's an undergrowth culture that has created life in Oak Cliff that's causing people from all over the city. Young people want to move to the Bishop Arts area because of that grassroots undergrowth culture. It's vibrant. It's exciting. I want to always get in on it. I want to know what they're thinking and doing. And then we have people like Jason Roberts, you know, who does pop-up streets or pop-up communities, found objects, just create a place out of nothing, some vacated corner. And this is vibrant, lively, wonderful healing for a city.
I think that energy is a sign of health. To the degree that people come together to discuss anything related to their communities, you begin to know your neighbors, you know their neighbors' kids, you begin to share ideas, and without that energy, cities just wither. There's no energy, no force behind doing anything.
Ignacio Bunster Osa is a landscape architect and urban designer, and he's a principal of Wallace Robertson Todd. His new book is called Reconsidering Ian McHarg, The Future of Urban Ecology. Gail Thomas, my other guest, is CEO of Trinity Trust. Both will participate in the Dallas Institute of Humanities and Culture's What Makes a City Conference tomorrow at the Latino Cultural Center. So nice to have you both here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks to all of you who are listening today. We really appreciate it.